Welcome to the Nations Church podcast. We hope this message blesses you.
Usually at the end of the year, I talk to God about what do I give our church? We're streaming today. It's a singular message that I really felt, you know, I was going to just deliver some vision maybe, or maybe cast some really compelling deep theology. I just really felt this week as I was preparing for this message, the Lord really tell me, just minister the word to the people. Let the word minister to the hearts of the people at the end of this year. So we're gonna do that today, is that okay? We're gonna unpack the word and we're gonna preach from the account of Jacob, who lived about 3,500 years ago. And there was this character by the name of Jacob. He's one of the sons of Isaac. And from the day he was born, we understand that Jacob was a bit of a trickster. He was a bit of a deceiver, a bit of a hustler, a bit of a manipulator, and he kind of maneuvered his way through life. I reckon Jacob would have been a brilliant player on the TV series called Survivor. That's the kind of guy he was. He would have won Survivor many, many times. And so we're going to read the account in Genesis chapter 29. Thank you so much, Sean. Give Sean a big hand. Genesis chapter 29, it's quite a humorous text, I have to warn you. We're going to read this, and as I was preparing this, I was actually alone in my office on Friday, and I literally laughed out loud so many times as I was trying to prepare this message. Genesis 29, verse 14. After Jacob had stayed with Laban for about a month, Laban said to him, "You shouldn't work for me without pay just because we are relatives. Tell me how much your wages should be." Sounds reasonable, does it not? Now, Laban had two daughters. The older daughter was named Leah, and the younger one was Rachel. There was no sparkle in Leah's eyes. She had a nice personality, though, I'm sure. But Rachel had a beautiful figure and a lovely face. Since Jacob was in love with Rachel, no kidding, he told her father, "I'll work for you for 7 years if you'll give me Rachel, your younger daughter, as my wife." "Agreed," Laban replied. "I'd rather give her to you than to anyone else. Stay and work with me." So Jacob worked 7 years to pay for Rachel, but his love for her was so strong that it seemed to him but a few days. How many of you know that if you really want something, working for it doesn't seem like work at all? Finally, the time came for him to marry her. "I have fulfilled my agreement," Jacob said to Laban. "Now give me my wife so I can sleep with her." This guy, man. Straight face. We're streaming to everyone. So Laban invited everyone in the neighborhood and prepared a wedding feast. But that night when it was dark, Laban took Leah to Jacob and he slept with her. Laban had given Leah a servant, Zilpah, to be her maid. But when Jacob woke up in the morning, it was Leah. "What have you done to me?" Jacob raged at Laban. "I worked 7 years for Rachel. Why have you tricked or deceived me?" "Well, it's not our custom here to marry off a younger daughter ahead of the firstborn," Laban replied. "But wait until the bridal week is over. Then we'll give you Rachel too, provided you promise to work another 7 years for me." This morning, I want to speak to you on this thought. This is not what I hoped for. This is not what I hoped for. Because I reckon at the end of every year, the end of every year is a strange time, isn't it? Like we reflect, if you're anything like me, we kind of reflect. And it's like we start every calendar year with high hopes. High hopes for the new body we're going to have, the washboard abs, the fit figure, the new career, a brand new start in marriage. I had someone walk through the doors today and said, "I'm going to do better next year. I'm going to come to church on time." They were on time for the 10 past 10 service. Right? "I want to do better. I want to do it." We have high hopes at the start of every year. But then when we get to the end of the year, we don't always end up with what we hoped for at the start of the year. Come on, somebody. So what do you do when you get to the end of the year and you have something that you actually weren't hoping for? What do you do when you find yourself in a season that you did not hope to find yourself in? How do you respond when you have such high hopes and you invest 7 years hoping to get Rachel only to wake up next to Leah? What do you do? What do you do when you get what you don't expect? And at this time of the year particularly, you feel like you've invested so much in your career. You've invested so much in your marriage. You've invested so much in raising those kids. You've invested so much in taking care of your health, maybe getting that degree, that qualification. You invested in those shares. You invested in building that house. You invested in that particular dating relationship only to get to the end of the year. And you haven't got Rachel, but you're waking up next to Leah. You haven't got what you hoped for. It's not what you thought it would. I started with high hopes. I put so much time into this. I'm turning 50 next year. And through all the years of pastoring, I reckon most of the time, people live in a place where they're experiencing a life or a season or a reality that is not what they'd hoped for. The reason for that is because there's not a single person on earth that hopes for the worst. We always hope for the best. Come on, somebody. How do we know that? Just ask any single person about who they're hoping to marry. And the list that they've written down of the person they wish to meet and marry one day, right? That inevitably is a unicorn. It's a 9 out of 10 person. They themselves might be a 5 or 6 out of 10 on their best day, but they're always hoping to one day marry a 9 or a 10 on their best day. I'm talking about like when recovering from gastro, you lose 5 kilos, put some makeup on, hair. On your best day, you're a 6 out of 10. But you're always hoping for a 9 out of 10. We're naturally wired to hope for the best. But what happens when we invest so much of our time, so much of our effort, so much of our prayers even, to get to a season in our life where we reflect back and go, this is not what I was hoping for. This is not what I was expecting. We invest all of this, wake up one day and go, hold up a second, that's not Rachel, it's Leah. Just a bit of a side note, if your name is Leah, please don't feel bad. It's just a metaphoric idea of this thing that we're not hoping for. And if your name is Rachel, don't get a fat head. Again, it's metaphoric for this beautiful figured, lovely faced woman. Not necessarily you, okay? It's just a metaphor, all right? It might be you, I'm just saying. I'm using it for like preaching cred. But the mistake we can make is to think that if we end up with something that looks nothing like what we thought God had promised us, the mistake we can make is to conclude that God's not in it. Have you ever got your hopes up at the start of the year thinking you were finally going to get your breakthrough, only to wake up at the last weekend of the year and realize that your breakthrough looks nothing like what you were hoping for? So I'm preaching to somebody today because I know that there's someone in Myrie, someone in Wangara, someone in Belmont, come on, someone in Scarborough, someone in Port Kennedy, someone in Bunbury, someone in Cork, someone in Phnom Penh, someone in online, where God wants you to know maybe the prophetic word, the word of encouragement for you for the end of 24 is this, that just because it's not what you hope for, it doesn't mean God is not in it. Just because it doesn't look like what you thought that it would look like, it doesn't mean that God is not in it. Maybe you find yourself at the end of 24 and you've spent all that money and time and effort to change your diet, go to all the doctor's appointments, go and see all the naturopaths and then try this and try that alternative only to find yourself in 24 still grappling with that chronic illness. It doesn't mean God's not in it. Come on, somebody. Maybe you've been to marriage counseling and seen all the marriage mentors and read all the books and done all the date nights only to find that at the end of 24, your marriage is still struggling. It doesn't mean God's not in it. Maybe you're here and you've seen the psychs and you've done all those things, but you look at 24 and you're still triggered and there's still trauma and grief and things that still affect you. I'm here to tell you that it doesn't mean that God's not in it. What have you invested so much faith and hope and anticipation and prayer into only to find that at the end of the year, it's not quite what you hope for it to be? It kind of is. It's still a woman, but it's Leah, not Rachel. It kind of is. It's still a thing, but it's not quite how you hoped that it would turn out. Maybe you're here and you know that you've invested so much in your spiritual walk with God because at the start of 24, you thought, I'm going to do better with God. I'm going to wake up every morning at 5 a.m. and read my Bible and pray. Only, and you feel like, you know, if I do that at the start of 24, by the end of 2024, I'm going to be this person that is so full of God, so happy and so serene all the time, only to discover that after waking up at 5 a.m. all year, you're as grumpy as, no one wants to have anything to do with you. Come on, even God's saying, man, no one has any time with that kind of energy. It's like, just go back to sleep, babe. Just wake up at 7 and pray then, we're good. What happens when you put so much of who you are into something only to discover that what God actually gives you looks nothing like what you hoped He would actually give you? We're going to unpack that conundrum today. Is that okay? Because I just believe that God is going to just encourage you, give you some insight into how He works and what He's doing behind the scenes, behind our expectations. So we're going to look at the life of Jacob. Is that okay? Let me tell you what God was up to in Jacob's life. So you got to understand that Jacob, in the lineage of God's plan, Abraham begot Isaac, Isaac begot Jacob. Jacob's life was part of God's plan to perpetuate the Abrahamic covenant. Do you understand that? So we understand that was part of Jacob's life. Now, you also need to understand that the Bible tells us that Jacob had significant character issues, character dysfunctions, a bit like all of us, really. God needed to do a work in his life, and he was carrying a lot of these dysfunctions into his adulthood. His own name, Jacob, means deceiver. He was a manipulator, a schemer, a scammer. He was born coming out of the womb as a twin, holding on to his brother's heel because he just didn't want to be second. He was competitive and he had an ego. And I mean, you wouldn't trust Jacob as far as you could kick him. Do you know what I mean? He was that kind of guy. And on the other hand, his older brother, older twin Esau, was at the other end. He was a straight up guy. He was an outdoorsman. He was a hunter. He was a free spirit. He was very much a man's man. And his father Isaac loved Esau, but Jacob, on the other hand, was much more of an indoors kid. He'd rather play Minecraft in his bedroom and hide out and not have anything to do with the world, right? But he was a bit of a mummy's boy. The Bible tells us that Isaac loved Esau, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Now, you also need to understand, by biblical context, the firstborn Esau had the birthright. In other words, he had rights, first cut of the best inheritance and the father's blessing and all of that. Now, Jacob, being a supplanter, a deceiver, a manipulator, a schemer, just couldn't stand the fact that his older brother was going to get first rights to all of the blessings of the family. You following me so far? So he thought to himself, I'm going to cheat my older brother out of all the good things that's coming his way, and I'm going to take that, work my way to take it for myself. So they're now a little older, they're kind of in their young adult years, and Jacob figured out, I know my brother well, he's a straight up guy, but he's also very impulsive. He acts way before he thinks. In fact, Esau hardly ever thought of anything at all. He just acted, it was a matter of action, right? Hardly ever engaged his brain. Now, he knew that Esau was out hunting, and for a couple of days Esau was out hunting. He thought, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to get Esau to renounce his birthright and to give his birthright to me. And I'm going to do this at his hungriest moment. I'm going to cook this really delicious stew and ask him if he wants to eat it. And so he does. He says, Esau, Esau comes back from hunting, he says, Esau, I've cooked this delicious stew. Esau could smell it. He goes, man, bro, that's delicious, man. Give me some. I'm about to die. I want to eat some of that stew. To which Jacob said, cool, I've got some stew for you. But Jacob was never going to do something for nothing. And he says to Esau, you can have this stew, provided right now you renounce that birthright and hand it over to me. To which Esau did not even think of the ramifications of it. He was just thinking of his own stomach. He said, all right, cool, whatever. Eats the stew, renounces the birthright. And then Jacob takes this birthright off Esau. That's a whole different sermon altogether of trading short-term pleasure for long-term destiny. Come on, somebody. This is what Esau did. In fact, Esau was the kind of guy that did a whole bunch of things that was really displeasing to God and all that sort of stuff. But the clincher was this, that in ancient times, the son, the oldest son, was the holder of the primary birthright. And when the patriarch or the father is close to death, the holder of the birthright, usually the firstborn, had the right to go to the Father and ask him to pronounce a blessing over him as a holder of the birthright. And now Jacob, having cheated the birthright verbally from Esau, goes to his father Isaac, who was close to death. He was blind. He puts on Esau's clothes so he smelt like Esau, and asked, pretended to be Esau, and asked the father, "Father, would you pronounce the blessing over me?" I'm telling you all of this for a reason. To which Isaac, thinking it was Esau, begins to bless Jacob with what was legally Esau's blessing to have. Esau and Isaac are completely mortified that Jacob had tricked this whole thing of getting this blessing from Isaac and stealing the blessing off Esau. That in Genesis 27 verse 41, it says, Esau held a grudge against Jacob because of the blessing his father had given him. He said to himself, "The days of mourning my father are near, then I will kill my brother Jacob." When Rebekah was told what her older son Esau had said, she sent for her younger son Jacob and said to him, "Your brother Esau is planning to avenge himself by killing you." How many of you know that is a dysfunctional family right there? What an absolute mess. But here is my point. In spite of this absolutely crazy, messy, sinful, dry, looked like a soap opera, God was still committed to fulfilling the Abrahamic covenant, his plans and purposes through this joker called Jacob. I'm here to tell you today, if you feel like you've messed your life up in 2024, God is still faithful and committed to fulfilling his plans and his purposes through whatever mess you think you've made of your life. Jacob was a deceiver. Jacob was like, but in spite of all of Jacob's flaws and mistakes, God used this whole tricking, this whole manipulating thing of getting his birthright to be the impetus for God to then say to Rebekah, "Your brother is going to kill you. You need to go to Haran." It was in Haran that he meets Laban. See how God is completely at work. God was using even the worst deed of cheating a birthright out of his own brother for God to somehow work his destiny and purpose into Jacob's life. You follow me so far? And it was in Haran that he meets Laban. Laban was the father of Leah and Rachel. Now, here's the thing. When every day that he worked for Laban, it was like he was looking at an older version of himself in the mirror. Laban himself was a deceiver and a trickster. And every day that this Jacob, this supplanter, this deceiver worked for Laban, he saw a picture of what his life would one day end up like if God had not been at work in his life. See, Jacob, when he gets there, he thought he could do a deal with Laban. He thought that he could somehow cheat or bypass the custom of the day and marry the girl with a beautiful body and the pretty face instead of the one with a nice personality. Give me the younger daughter. I want to marry her, and we're going to do this deal. I'll work for you for 7 years, but you're going to somehow bypass the customs of the day and give me. See, God allowed Jacob to be deceived by Laban because it was part of God's plan to shape deception out of Jacob's life. I'm here to say to someone today, sometimes God allows something external to disappoint us in order to root out something internal that might one day disqualify us. So maybe you're here today, the end of 2024, and you're waking up next to Leah instead of God giving you your Rachel. Maybe God is working on you before he works through you. Maybe you're here today and you're in a season in life where you feel like, God, I'm not where I hoped I would be. I'm not getting what I hoped I'd get. I'm not ending 2024 with all the blessing I thought you'd give me at the start of 2024. Maybe I'm saying to you today that you're living out the Genesis 29 summary where God had to work on Jacob before he could work through Jacob. Because God knew that for the Abrahamic covenant to be fulfilled through Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, there was stuff in Jacob's life that God simply had to uproot. God simply had to work on. God simply had to shape out. God simply had to disciple out of him. Yes, I believe God's a God of breakthrough. Come on, how many of you believe God's a God of breakthrough? Yes, I believe God's a miraculous God. Yes, I believe he's a God of blessing and favor and abundance and prosperity. But what we also need to stop to consider is maybe, just maybe, you haven't quite got what you're hoping for yet, because God is working on you before he works through you. Maybe, just maybe, God wants to work on your character before he works through your gifts. Maybe God is working on your heart before he works on the testimony of your mouth. Come on, somebody. Maybe there's stuff in your life. Maybe God wants to give you Leah for a time, because he knows right now you can't handle Rachel. You want the beautiful body and the pretty face? You can't handle it right now. Take the good personality. Maybe he's preparing you. Maybe God is working on you before he works through you. Because some of the stuff we hope for, yes, it's in God. Yes, God wants you to have the perfect marriage. He wants you to have the most amazing, well-behaved kids. But if God gave you that right now, you're just going to stick it all on Instagram and be proud. And even more controlling than you already are. And if God were to actually give you the millions of dollars, pour it into your business, he knows that you won't have money, money will have you. You don't even tithe right now. You think, no, pastor, when my deal goes through, I promise you I'll give some to the church. Rubbish, you'll just buy a Tesla. That's what happens when you get money. Maybe God wants to work on you before he works through. You're getting this. Come on, you're getting something out of this, right? Sometimes God allows you to get what you didn't hope for in order to keep working on you until you can handle walking in what you've been hoping for. So many of us want to walk in great blessing, want to walk in great favor, and sometimes God just withholds it. So yeah, I know it's been 7 years and you hope to get Rachel by now. Because man, Jacob, as soon as that 7-year mark clocked in, it was that final hour of his work shift. 7 years, he scrolls right up to HR. Give me my bonus. Only to find out that Laban's HR department don't play that way. But God was more at work in Jacob's life than you even realize. In the 14 years that Jacob worked for Laban, God uprooted so much in his life. He became a completely different man. And we don't have time to read all the stories and all the drama around Leah and Rachel, and Jacob actually ended up marrying them both. So he had two wives. But en route to being finally reconciled and restored to Esau. Remember, Esau, his brother, wanted to kill him. That caused him to run to Haran and meet Laban. Makes sense to you guys? He's now, 20 years later almost, about to reconcile and restore with this brother he stole the birthright from and wanted to kill him. En route to that, he has an encounter with God. And the Bible tells us that this encounter with God was essentially a man, capital M. I believe this encounter, this wrestle that Jacob has with this man was like a pre-incarnate appearance of Jesus Christ in the Old Testament. And there are some accounts where we think, many scholars also concur, that this like the fourth man in the fire with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, the commander of the armies of the Lord in the book of Joshua. They were the pre-incarnate appearances of Jesus. And it's almost like God wants to speak to us out of the text of the Old Testament to remind us that there are some things in life, when we walk through journeys of life where we don't get what we hope for, Jesus is prepared to meet with us in our places of disappointment while he begins to beat the hip socket out, to cause us to walk with a limp. Come on, somebody. To change us to become the man or woman that we need to be in order to lay hold of the very things that we were hoping for. We pick up this account. Genesis 32, then Jacob was left alone and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of day. Now when he saw that he did not prevail against him, he touched the socket of his hip and the socket of Jacob's hip was out of joint as he wrestled with him. And he said, let me go for the day breaks. But he said, I will not let you go until you bless me. So he said to him, what is your name? He said, Jacob. He said, your name shall no longer be called Jacob or deceiver, but Israel, meaning one who grapples with God, but Israel. For you have struggled with God and with men, and have prevailed. I need to preach this. I think the church needs to go back to preaching about wrestling with God, wrestling about the issues of our character, wrestling with the issues about the way that we do things sometimes, wrestling with our impatience, wrestling with a, I only pray to you unless you bless me, God. Wrestling with that sense of, it's time for people in 2025 to get to a place where we're not believing necessarily just for God to do something for us, but we're saying, God, would you do something in me? I'm not just believing for you to work through me, but would you just work on me? Because for so many of us, the Lord in his infinite wisdom and kindness looks at our lives and goes, you can't handle Rachel if I gave her to you right now. You can't handle the kind of blessing that I know that I seeded in you to have, the kind of destiny that I want you to walk in, the kind of wealth that I know that you one day should be able to handle. You can't handle it right now. But would you yield and wrestle with me? And it's in that place that I believe in 2025, this coming year, so many of you are gonna have a wrestle with God and you're gonna walk out of there, not running, but limping, but close to Jesus. Come on, somebody. Walking close to Jesus. I'm yielded to you, Jesus. I'm a different man now. I'm no longer Jacob, but I'm Israel. And it is this beautiful picture that we see towards the end as things got older for Jacob and for Esau. He's now married to Leah and Rachel. The Lord's blessed Jacob with children and livestock. And so now we're going to read Genesis chapter 33. And I want you to hear the language of a man after many years of letting the Lord work on him. And now the Lord is working through him finally. Genesis 33, he comes to meet again with Esau, his brother. He expected, after all these years, that Esau was going to muster up a small army to kill him. And it was going to be really tense. And he was nervous about how all of this was going to turn out. And he would have ordinarily, in an untransformed, undiscipled way, would have never wanted to go back and restore to Esau. Never. But because he'd worked, allowed the Lord to work on his heart, for 14 years, he's now a changed man. And some more years after that, he meets and has this wrestle with God, with Jesus himself. We see the account in Genesis 33, verse 4. He now sees Esau from a distance. It says, but Esau runs to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him. And they wept. And he lifted his eyes and saw the women and children and said, who are these with you? So we said, the children whom God has graciously. See that language? That's gratitude now. This egotistical, manipulating conniver who's not grateful for anything. He says, graciously given your servant. Then the maidservants came near. They and their children bowed down. And Leah also came near with her children and they bowed down. Afterward, Joseph and Rachel came near and they bowed down. Then Esau said, what do you mean by all this company which I met? And he said, these are to find favor in the sight of my Lord. Never in the history of their brotherly love had Jacob ever addressed Esau as my Lord, but he does here. But Esau said, I have enough, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself. And Jacob said, no, please. If I've now found favor in your sight, then receive my present from my hand, inasmuch as I've seen your face as though I'd seen the face of God, and you were pleased with me. In other words, this is what I was hoping for, that you would treat me kindly, that would reconcile and restore. Now that I've seen your countenance, it's like God's in this. Come on, you follow me so far? Right? Please take my blessing that is brought to you because God has dealt graciously with me and because I have enough. The man that stole a blessing from his brother returns after almost 20 years to bless him back. Wow. Wow. So he urged him and he took it. Then Esau said, let us take our journey. Let us go and I will go before you. But Jacob said to him, my Lord, hear this, it's going to blow your mind. My Lord knows that the children are weak and the flocks and herds which are nursing are with me. And if the men should drive them hard one day, all the flock will die. Please let my Lord go on ahead before his servant. I will lead on slowly at a pace which the livestock that go before me and the children are able to endure until I come to my Lord, to come to you, Esau, in Seir. Wow. Here is Jacob, driven, ambitious, wants to achieve, wants to make a name for himself. Doesn't want to be the second younger twin with no birthright and blessing, or the secondary birthright and blessing. He lies and cheats his way through life to get ahead. You know, whatever he could do, he lies to his father, puts on Esau's clothes and cheats his brother out of birthright and blessing, runs to Haran, and there he meets his mirror image of the older man Laban, and Laban deceives him and uproots that sense, makes him self-reflect, and after 14 years and beyond, he begins to have encounters with Jesus and the Lord works on his heart, and here he is as an older man now, fully reconciled and restored with Esau. Says this, this is going to bless you. If I could paraphrase what Jacob was saying, he'd be saying this: Esau, all that I have is, I realize now that's because of the Lord. All of the striving in my own strength to get my own achievements, it's all because of the Lord. And I know that we need to go from here to Seir. And in my old state, I would have wanted to be the first one there before you, Esau, because we've always competed. But he says this: I'm going to live from now on at a sustainable pace, only ever considering the best interests of the people I lead, the livestock that I'm nursing. You guys are not getting this. So many of us strive, hoping that we'll one day get the Rachel, to burn our marriages, disappoint our kids, not come to church and be in community. Come on, somebody. We do stuff that breaks the heart of God to get the things we want. No wonder God allows us at different seasons of our lives to wake up next to Leah instead of Rachel, because he knows that he needs to work on us before he works through us. Unless we're prepared to allow our egos to die, we'll never walk in the fullness of all that God, we know that God has promised for us, because we can't handle the blessing sometimes that's gonna come our way. And I prophesy in 2025 at Nations Church, we're gonna be a church that understands what it's like to first allow God to work on us before he works through us, that we allow God to work on our character before he works through our gifts, that we're going to allow God to work on the inside of us before we become spectacular on the outside of us. Because I know the church that the world needs one day is a church that understands what it's like to bow before God and before men to say, I am but your servant. I am here at your beck. I'm here to fulfill your will, Jesus, not my will. Would you break my hip at the socket? Because I am not running anymore. I'm limping with you. Limp away. 2025, limp away. As long as you know that your hand is fixed firmly in the hands of Jesus, your life might not be what you hoped it would be, but I'm telling you today, it doesn't mean that God's not in it. Doesn't mean that God's not in it. He's at work. There are more things that he's working on in you, because he knows that there are more things he wants to entrust in you. Musicians, you can join me. In 2024, maybe you're here and you're living in a season that you did not hope to be living in. It's not what you expected. It's the last weekend of December. You look at your life and go, man, it's... Yield to the one you're wrestling with. He's working on you before he works through you. Sometimes we like God to work for us, don't we? Yes, he is always working for our good, but sometimes he wants to work in you before he starts working for you. He knows what he's doing. He might not be giving you what you want yet, but in time, if you believe that he's the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that he will fulfill his covenant and his promises to you. Trust that in time, you don't know when that time is, could be 7 years, could be 14 years, could be 20, I don't know. But you gotta trust that in the right time, he will give you what you were hoping for, when he knows that you're ready to steward it. Happy New Year.
Thanks for listening to the Nations Church podcast. For more info, please visit nationschurch.com. Thank you.